Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everyone, it's Yas here, and I'm calling today with a little favor to ask. Over the recent weeks and months, I've had loads of you get in touch with some great questions, and today I'm going to be trying something new with the show. I'm trialing a Q&A segment where I'll be joined by a co-host and elite coach educator, Gerard Jones. Now, these are discussions which are going to be taking place every Sunday evening at 7:30 GMT, live on Twitter Space, if you wanted to get involved directly. Otherwise, I'll be releasing them here every Wednesday on the Coaches Network podcast. So for today's format, it's slightly different, and for around about 30 minutes, each discussion will be dedicated to a question that has been sent in, where myself and Gerard will be going into some real depth and sharing our views and opinions on the topic in order to leave you with some key takeaways to consider in your own environments. So the favour I'm asking for today, guys, is if you could let me know your thoughts on the new format, and you can do this by getting in touch on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that is at The Coaches Net. And of course, if you have a question, feel free to send that in too. Hope you enjoy the new format.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach, coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
Yeah, what's happening?
Cool. I mean, so obviously it's been a little while since we've managed to jump on one of these spaces, but much needed break and a much needed return to hopefully some productive coaching conversations. So Gerard, just to, before we get really, you know, deep dive into it, maybe a bit of an intro around who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there, man.
Yeah, so great to be back, and you know, looking forward to getting these spaces going again, especially with some of the accredited CPD that we're looking to do in some of the next sessions. My name is Gerard Jones. I currently work as a director of coaching for Sporting Kansas City, MLS Sporting Kansas City, within their youth department. So I oversee one of the academy affiliates, Sporting City North, and then alongside being a coach educator with US Soccer and also the FA, and sort of juggling that with experiences working in the EPPP at different levels and formats of the game, and studying my doctorate, where I'm looking into skill acquisition and how coaches use feedback to guide the search of a player. So, yeah, we're really looking forward to chatting with everyone, and that hopefully that gives you a bit of an insight into my perspectives.
Awesome, awesome. Guys, and similar to Joe, I'm working as a coach developer myself, currently working for the FA, of course, several of their qualifications, including the UEFA C, UEFA B license, as well as a couple others. 15 years experience coaching, predominantly working in the male game, but had some experience in the female game, and also got a bit of a background working with goalkeepers as well. So very brief insight around who we are and what we do. And just to kind of give you a bit of a heads up on how things will work tonight. So obviously in the past few months, we've run a lot of CPD accredited spaces where we've gone into different series of conversations and topics. Tonight's slightly different. just to kind of reintroduce the spaces back to the community. We've decided to tackle a few questions that have maybe been thrown to us in the last couple of weeks and months that we think might be of benefit and use for everyone else to get some insights on. So, Gerard, I know I've had a few questions come my way. I don't know if there's anything specific that you want to start off with, and then we can get cracking from there, mate.
No, good to go.
Cool. So, Gerard, the most recent thing I can think about is the use of constraints and restrictions within practice, and whether that might be supporting or directly impacting on the ability of players to perceive what's going on in the situation in practice, or whether we're better off providing incentives in a practice which is unrestricted, if that makes sense. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think in that question itself, there's almost like a conflict in terms, because constraints, it can often be misunderstood, right? Even the terminology, and it maybe it's the right word, maybe it's not, but often when people hear constraints, they think of something that's limiting or restricting. But within the ecological dynamics and nonlinear pedagogy, a constraints-led approach and constraints itself often relate to the environmental constraints, the individual, the task, or the environment, right? Those areas. Now, constraints are neither a positive or a negative. Or effectively, what you're doing is you're amplifying or dampening something. So depending on the rule of the activity, depending on the information that I'm sharing, how I've organized the use of equipment, whatever it may be, the methods of scoring and so forth, that's going to influence and shape the relevant information that players have access to, right? And you talked about incentives. So if I'm running an activity and there's counter goals, and the team that I'm on can score in these counter goals that are situated in certain locations of the field, and the other team can't, they have to score in a different way, that's going to constrain the players to have to search for certain types of information, right? If there's a condition on the activity whereby I have to score in a certain way, I have to pass the ball into a certain player or into a certain zone in order to score, that's going to constrain the players to have to search for those type of information sources, depending on where that teammate is and where the opposition are in that particular zone or area. No different to a touch limit, no different to an incentive. So yes, there are things such as like restrictions and rewards. And of course, there's advantages and disadvantages to that. I think for coaches, they've got to view it as, if I'm using constraints on the practice, what am I, you know, use the word incentive. Well, everything's an incentive because it's all information. But you might reward some more than others. So a question I'll throw back, you know, to you in the room, and I've said this before as a statement, is the quality of your questions often represents the quality of your values. So I'll say it again, the quality of your questions represents the quality of your values. So in that particular moment, if I'm saying that if you beat a player with a dribble or a pass that breaks two or more defenders, eliminates two or more defenders, so breaking lines, right? So if your pass or your dribble can eliminate two or more defenders and leads to a goal, it's worth 2 points. But if you do this, it's only worth 1 point. Well, you know, that shows, right? So if I say, hey, you're going to get... I'll simplify it even better, actually. Even just thinking about this. If you can beat a player with a dribble to score, it's worth 1 point. But if you score with a pass, it's worth 3. I'm not saying you have to do that. I'm just using that as an example to paint the message, where you can see that there's a higher value on passing versus dribbling. That might be okay, depending on what you want to amplify in that particular scenario, right, that you're trying to create in your environment. But there's a trade-off to that. If you say, hey, if you can, if you're restricting the players, you know, we've all done this, haven't we, Yaz? And you've seen it, right? Two touch. We're playing two touch. The other day I watched a coach, three touches. Okay, great. The challenge with that can be is that if I have to take two touches in order to retain possession, again, I'm constrained because now I have to really think about my touch limit. So there's a task constraint. But then the information that I get, because all the information is in the environment, there's a challenge there because if you give me a certain type of pass, which maybe I need to take more touches to get it under control, I can't. I'm at a disadvantage. Or if you play to me and I control it, and I should have, you know, and I might have to dribble. That's what I'm saying. Like I might have to stay on the ball and dribble to beat a player. I can't because of the rule of the activity. I've got to play that first time or off two touches. So straight away, you're eliminating dribbling. You're eliminating the ability to drive. You know, if anyone's been watching Copa America, and we're going to do an analysis on the Euros, you'll know that certain teams, they'll adopt certain strategies. Some teams are man-to-man, right, when they're defending. Well, a great way of eliminating a man-to-man pressure is driving at people. Because if you can drive with the ball and run past people to break a line, straight away, you're asking questions, well, who goes to that player? So you're going to attract, you know, and if you can drive and connect, that's going to ask questions. At some point, a defender has to go and close that player down. Otherwise, they're going to be uncontested and effectively they could take a shot from distance or they could thread a pass into a dangerous area. So then it breaks the strategy, right? So if you don't allow for that ability to dribble and drive with the ball, well, you're eliminating creativity. So sorry, this is a long answer and it's not to give people loads of information. It's to set the scene is that everything we do has a trade-off, right? There's intended and unintended consequences. Yaz, you've used that term before, intended and unintended. So really, you know, an alternative to that scenario could be, what if you said that you can, for example, try to play within three touches or less? You're not saying that they can't take more, and you're not saying that they have to take three. You're saying try to play within three touches or less. So by that challenge, you're affording the player themselves to recognize that, hey, if I can play one touch, I can play one touch. If I need to take five or six and drive, I can do that. If I need to take an extra touch, I can release within three. If I need to release within, you're giving them the opportunity to try, which therefore means that they're having to search information within the environment to recognize where's Yaz, where's his positioning, where's the defender? How can I solve that problem in this moment? So, you know, there's lots of information there. To summarize, it's that constraints is a negative or a positive. There's going to be intended and unintended consequences depending on how you use incentives, challenges based on the environment. What we have to recognize as a coach is, are we aware of what those what ifs could be? Because if we're not, then we're just shooting from the hip. We need to be planning our sessions and our coaching interactions with intention because we recognize that, hey, if I impose this challenge, this rule, this reward, this whatever to Yaz right now, I'm expecting that this may happen, but I also accept that this doesn't happen. So then you're accepting that you might be losing something somewhere else, but you're gaining in another area. And I think that's where coaches, you know, that's probably a great segue to talk, isn't it, Yaz? If how much time do we actually spend thinking about that stuff? Like, do we think, hey, if I impose this rule on this activity, or I'm going back to the word you used when you asked me the question at the start, you said, hey, what's your thoughts on incentives? Do we even think about that hey, if I use this incentive, like, how does that impact the players? Maybe it's the wrong incentive. I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think there's some good points. I think the key things that kind of really stand out for me as I'm listening to you speak are, one, I think incentives are obviously useful, but obviously they can be, you know, they can be considered somewhat guiding, right? Because it's almost like that's what the coach wants us to do. I think when you remove incentives and you put in conditions, so for instance, if you tell them they have to play on two touch rather than incentivizing them to play on two touch by using your example of can you try to, then I think you might see what you want to see. But the, I guess the thought that comes into my head, and it's part of the I guess the discussion I had with another coach on this when they asked me about this type of stuff was, yeah, but how do you know the players are picking up on this stuff? Because then you go into that realm of, you know, are they doing things consciously or unconsciously? And the coach responded to me, well, why does it matter whether it's conscious or unconscious? In my opinion, I said, well, if it's unconscious and they're getting success from it, they don't know what's allowing them to get the success necessarily, but they also equally, if they don't get success, then they might struggle to identify where the success wasn't allowed to occur, if that makes sense. So, I mean, those are my initial thoughts on it. How would you respond to that?
Well, there's a point there that's, you know, I don't necessarily, and I know you don't either, we're not saying that coaches can or can't use incentives. There's always an advantage and disadvantage, isn't there? You gave an example there where it's like, you know, if you have to use an incentive, that's guiding them, which you're absolutely right, it is. I mean, that's the whole reason why we're doing it. We're guiding them towards, hey, we'd prefer you to do this. You know, there's an activity that I saw the other day where it was the location of the goals behind the defender that's pressing and closing down an attacker were worth different points. One goal was worth 3 and another goal was worth 1. And it was intentionally, which is good, it was intentionally designed by the coach that it will influence the player's behavior because it's forcing the attacker to run across the defender and score on the inside, which was that goal was worth more points. So by theory, it's sort of hoping that the defender thinks, right, I don't want them to cut in the inside, so I want to try and show them outside. So I'm going to try and defend and direct them towards the goal that's worth least amount of points. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, is there, Yas? Like, that's okay if that's what you want, but then you've also got to accept that we are guiding the players towards that particular answer to that problem. And then, like you said, the alternative is you might not necessarily use that method of teaching, but then it's understanding, well, how else you're always incentivizing in some way, but players need to recognize the why. I think that's the biggest thing we have to speak about is how do we communicate the why to the player? So it's not necessarily that we're coaching the what. How can we spend more time thinking about the how and the why? Otherwise, players are just going to do whatever, but they don't know, well, I don't really know why I'm doing it. I know I have to go here because Yaz told me to, or that was the way to solve that problem, but I don't know why. I'm just going to do it because I was told to do it.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good point. And I think, where my mind goes in that, yes, we need the players to understand the why. They do need to understand the why. It can't be surface level to the point where it's just literally because I know what the coach is asking me to do. I know that's what the coach wants from me, if you like. But this is where I think, you know, you mentioned it earlier about coaching interactions, right? Planning your coaching interactions. I think this is really key because at the end of the day, I'm just generalizing, of course, but what we hopefully don't want is a situation where we're just putting players through things. They might have to perform actions or outcomes, but because the practice is forcing them to do that. Now, as an example, you might put a condition or you might adapt the areas of the pitches just to encourage certain things to happen from the players. But unless the players understand what the practice is forcing them to do, not literally, but actually within their thinking, within their perceptions, within their awareness, then my challenge to the idea of using restrictions, if you like, is, well, if the players don't understand what they're having to do as a result of the restriction, then they probably won't be able to transfer it into the game. Whereas if you utilize, like, as an example, if you think about the example you gave just now with the goal being behind a defender in different areas, well, how are you planning your interactions as a coach to help the players unpack and understand what's going on within the practice, even though the practice itself might not be directly what the game looks like per se? So, for instance, are you thinking about the type of questions you're going to ask your players? Are you thinking about the type of situations or the scenarios you're going to allow the players to express themselves in, so that you can gauge a better understanding of what the players are perceiving and taking away from what the practice is asking them or challenging them to do? Are you expecting that just because you ask a question and the players, you know, maybe don't answer it in the right way, that actually they don't understand it? So, you know, where my mind's going is, how deliberate, intentional are we about checking the understanding of the players around the demands of the practice and how the practice then correlates and transfers over to the game, therefore giving them an opportunity to see the relevance of it, if that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just, again, just knowing the why, isn't it? So we have to think about everything we have as intended and unintended consequences. And I think a great advantage would be, you know, we're talking about questions here that we can pose to each other. How often do we share the session plan with them in advance? Now, of course, there's a bias there because you're potentially influencing them on how to think or what to think. But, you know, if we take away that, sharing a session plan before, I think, is good practice, because it at least tells them, hey, there's what we're doing tonight, right? So people know, and you can build on that. One of the best things I saw recently was Craig Morris, Olympic slalom canoe coach, cleverly sharing an activity where he's working with elite athletes, right, at the Olympic level. And I think the principles can be applied across different domains here. He has a plan for what he wants to work on. And you can imagine, in you can't get any more dynamic and unpredictable than trying to coordinate yourself and a boat, well, whatever the canoe, in water that's changing rapidly in terms of the rhythm, the speed, everything, whilst trying to coordinate that through targets to get certain points and maneuver and manipulate how you're traveling through that obstacles, right, within certain time constraints. That's really hard. And it's never the same because it's water. The environment is just changing all the time. Well, that to me is very, very relatable to football, to soccer, because no situation is going to happen the exact same way. It can't. So there'll be similarities, but every situation is different. The way the defender's getting closed down, or the attacker, the way the players are moving, the way that we're passing the ball, the scenario, the numbers, the context of the environment, the scoreline, it's forever changing. So we know that this environment is unpredictable. And he was trying to go, okay, we're working in this environment, this context. How do I improve decision-making and problem-solving for players that operate in that unpredictability? That's the challenge that we have as soccer coaches, as football coaches. We're trying to improve behavior, right, and form habits. So he said, here's my session intentions, but he allowed the players, the athletes, to choose which one they wanted to work on. So they had the freedom where they could go, actually, that's more relevant to me. I like that activity more than that. Let's spend more time on this activity. And there's like almost this co-design. Could we take that element into our coaching practice? You know, I mean, I would argue, yeah. Can you imagine running an activity? You've got three activities in your session, four max, let's say, probably three. From start to finish, your arrival activity, your star activity, one of your initial practices into your main, and then your final practice. Of those practices, there's going to be things that the players probably relate to more than others. And there might be activities that are like, actually, that looks more fun, and that's going to benefit me more. Is there an advantage to us saying, look, we're working on this principle tonight, and here's the sort of menu of learning. Here's the menu of what we're going to work on. You get to choose which one we do. Actually, you know what? Let's bin off that practice. Let's focus more on that activity because we're going to get more reps. We're going to get more. And does that allow for more buy-in on the why and help the players appreciate more what they're doing? Yeah, I'll throw that one out there.
No, I think it's a good one, but I think, you know, fundamentally what you're saying there is you're allowing the players to explore what you think is what they think is most relevant, right? Because at the end of the day, if they think that you're safe, and I say this all the time, like, you know, we talk a lot about the three R's, obviously realism, relevance, repetition. I think the one thing that can't be negotiated on is the relevance. If the players don't understand it, and if it's not relevant to them, they'll never engage in it, and they'll never take anything away from it, because fundamentally they're just doing it because that's what the coaches asked them to, rather than understanding how it implements and affects their ability to perform or their development. Does that make sense? But no, some good stuff.
Spot on, because this is, so I'm going to use the example. You can imagine, I mean, I'm doing that all the time. I'm sharing menus of learning. And so we had it where we were in a practice. We'd had pre-season last week. And I got one of the coaches to share one of the activities. And literally, these were under 10 players. And we did it across different age groups, right up to under 19. But anyway, I'm just giving an example from the under 10 boys. The under 10s literally went, that doesn't make sense. Let's work on this. And they literally gave feedback immediate to the coach. And one of the activities was this directional type possession game. Looked more fun because it had more counter goals, this, that, the other. The other activity was probably more aligned with more pattern base. Not my preference, some of that I wouldn't normally like to see anyway. But the kids literally were like, don't want to do that. I want to do this. And they actually said, that makes more sense to me. And they were even involved in picking where they played in the activity. So the coach didn't say, right, you're going to be the number two, you're going to be the number six, you're the number seven, you're the... They put themselves in the positions. They set it up. And what was really cool was they even challenged one of the rules in the activity. They said, can we change this condition? And obviously, you can imagine me, I'm buzzing at this point. But that just taught me that, again, I just want to sort of quote what you just said, Yaz, which is the relevance. Players can quickly go, that's relevant to me, or that's not, or that doesn't make any sense. That's too complicated. That's simpler, and that's going to help me ready for Saturday. So I think there's a huge value in that. Absolutely. We don't have to be the oracle of all the answers, do we?
No, I think you're spot on there. I don't think we do, but I think this is where it puts more emphasis and challenge on the coaches to understand that if you're not there, if your role in any given moment isn't to be providing answers, and it links back into what you said earlier, then I think the least it should be is in those moments is to provide good questions. Okay, the interactions between your players should be either those answers that you're providing because they're relevant and useful and directly correlated and to what the players need and require in those moments, or their questions which are going to raise or challenge their considerations or furthermore check their understanding on their situation that they're in. So I think some good stuff there, Gerard. I guess I'll hand over to you in terms of any questions that might have come your way in recent weeks and months.
Yeah, big one has probably been, you know, what's the relevance of periodizing our load? So everyone online, and I'm seeing loads of this around, and I'm probably in the thick of it as well because I'm teaching on the B license right now, and we're talking about physical loading and all this type of stuff. And without naming a name, I had a coach message me the other day about doing a session and wanted to know the load. And I wanted to reply back, be like, you know, you're overcomplicating it. Just run a blooming session, you know, just put a session on. But I'm wondering how much we're getting into this sort of professionalization that's more geared towards top level first team, where in a first team environment, and even then you can't control everything, but for the most part, you control when they eat, when they sleep, what times they're practicing. You can decide if we're practicing tonight, if we're having a day off, if we're changing the time to correlate more to with the kickoff time. You can manipulate stuff to a degree, right? You've got what you might not have a control over is how and when the games are being played, which most people don't, but you have an idea of when the games are and if you win that game, when the next game is going to be and all this type of stuff if it's a tournament. So you can map then your loading. Right, well then, if we've just played on Sunday and we played Saturday and Sunday, or if in a performance environment, I mean, I'm related to this more to sort of grassroots development, But it might be that, you know, let's say you had a game on Tuesday, a game on Saturday, well, do you know what, or a game on Sunday, right? We normally practice on a Monday. Now we're not. We're going to have that as a day off. We're going to do X on Tuesday, then we're going to come in on Wednesday. But I'm seeing people worry too much about the loading, whereas in probably the environment you're working in and most people's environments, well, players are doing gymnastics, football, swimming, karate, whatever, volleyball, America, baseball, basketball. They're doing other sports. They're doing private one-to-ones. They've got school. They've got this. They've got that. So how the hell can we periodize load when we don't control all the intensity from a physical standpoint, not even considering just the cognitive, the physical standpoint that these players are under? We don't control how they eat, what goes in their bellies. We don't control the sleep. That's ultimately influenced by the parents and how they're parenting at home, right, and how much sleep they've got. And even then, that's not always possible to manage and influence, as any dad and mum will tell you. And then we're not in control of the cognitive bandwidth that they've got at school when they're getting battered with lots of information. So are we overcomplicating? My question is, are we overcomplicating the planning of our training environments when we're trying to sort of optimally manage? And I got asked this question of how do you sort of manage the load of a program and what are these groups currently doing? And my question back, I'm thinking, just put on a session. Like, I'm not saying be silly with it and you kill players, but we can over plan for, well, they need this rest or this recovery or this or that. But unless we've got access to certain types of data and you're GPS monitoring them and you're taking blood samples and you're doing X, Y, Z, and unless you've got access to other metrics and data, and you can objectively analyze it. And then even then, your access, are we overcomplicating? That's my question now, Yaz, is are we, because I'm seeing online people talking about tactical periodization, physical periodization, this periodization, that periodization. And my question back is, what do you think about that? Are we overcomplicating it? Why don't we just put on a session?
Yeah, I think in short, the answer is yes. It's definitely been over. It's one of them ones where, quite right, like you said, you know, unless you've got a full kind of overview of everything that's happening in this individual's life, let alone the other 12 or 15 individuals that are in the group as well, it's going to be impossible to manage that appropriately to suit the full, you know, to suit the needs and perfectly anyway. So I think, like you said, you know, put the session on, you'll have an idea of who your players are and what they can and can't do effectively. So it's up to you to use your observational eye as a coach to identify whether, right, is this stretching and challenging them too much from a physical standpoint, or is it not? And if it is, then the chances are they probably could do a little bit more. And if it isn't stretching them, you know, if it is stretching them, then just taper it down a bit, give them longer rest in between the breaks, you know, and then it might be being a bit more skillful in how you choose to intervene. So coming back to the previous question that, you know, you mentioned about planning your interactions. Well, you know, if you have a bit of an insight on the players, if you know that the practice that you're going to put them through today, or the series of practices that you want to run through with the players today is going to, you know, you're expecting quite a big, you know, a big commitment from an intensity standpoint, well, just manage it by breaking it up, by using your interventions to break up the intensity. So if it is too tough, if it is too physically demanding, you can physically see that, then make your interventions longer. Make your make your coaching points. Use the rests to coach. Let them play and then let them rest. Let them play and then let them rest. So that's one way of doing it, right? But then it might just be managing the individuals. You know, you like you said, unless you're doing all the tests and all the other stuff, even then you're not 100% accurate, right? But unless you have a full overview of those things, you're probably not going to be able to manage it any other way. So I think, you know, best advice, like you said, is just deliver the session. You know, what were you doing before you heard about the concept of periodization? You just delivering a session. Just deliver it. And if you found it was too hard for your players, you probably would have reduced it anyway. And I think the only thing I'd be conscious of, and I think this is just something to consider for coaches as well, is that not everyone's 100% effort looks the same in every session. And my output and your output ain't going to be the same in the same session, let alone on, you know, in every session consistently. So it might be that this Monday, as an example, I've had a bad night's rest on a Sunday night. So now when we're training on Monday, I might not be as, you know, bubbly or as energetic as I might usually be. So then just make an observation on that and manage that as an observation. I think on the flip side, it's depending on where they are in their week. So if you're working with kids, are you training on a Saturday or Sunday? Are you training on a Monday or Tuesday night? Or are you training on a Thursday or Friday night? Because you're training on a Friday night, guess what? They might be knackered from a week long of school. So I think it's just recognizing that and, you know, what have you got eyes on in terms of what their week looks like? Even if you don't have an idea of what their week looks like, what does the team's week look like? So do you train on a Friday night and then play on a Saturday?
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health. Their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Or do you train on a Friday night and play on a Sunday? Or any other, and how do you consider that? So, for instance, if you're training on a Friday night, you might want a high-intensity session. You might want a relatively low-intensity session so that they're not battering themselves for the Saturday morning game. So I think there's a few considerations for me there. I don't know what your thoughts are on those, Jeff.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And I think just going back to the naked eye, really, but part of me is also listening, thinking that we probably need to spend a lot of time just thinking about when are we going to do our best work. So based on the activity and the way it's designed, the rules and what we want to get out of it, what's the sort of objective of that activity? Does that lead itself more to interactions being during the breaks or during a natural stoppage? or both, or what, you know, just one or the other? Does it lead itself more to interactions where you're freezing to capture a moment and you're stopping the whole group, or you're doing stuff on the fly with individuals or small groups? How does it, because there'll be some activities where, depending on sort of the work, the rest, and just in general, which is the sort of repetitions that we want to create, the meaningful repetitions and the scenario, it may lend itself better to, actually, I'm going to do most of my coach interaction in the breaks. So during the planned stoppages, that's when I'm going to ask questions, give feedback, whatever. Or in other activities, perhaps it's better to stop it in a different way, because part of the activity pause of you coaching is also their rest and recovery, perhaps, or whatever, whatever. So I think, you know, and there's so many factors, isn't there? Like, it's interesting. Working in the UK, I always remember, like, Rochdale coaching, and I mean, I hate England at times in terms of just coaching in the cold and the rain. It's not ideal, is it? You know, when it's snowing or when it's bolting down with rain or whatever, those are the days where it's like, keep them playing. Keep the kids playing, and you're doing your feedback in other ways. But then over here, I mean, where I am now, I'm lucky we don't get much cold days where, when we are typically training indoors, it's better, right, when it's cold. So the challenges we have is that it's more the thunder and lightning, or just in general, the heat. The heat's a big one. So that's another concept of how you're managing them, because of the external factor there and reducing your training loads and things like that. That all has an impact, doesn't it, in terms of their readiness? I think there was something you said there that certainly got me thinking of just the readiness of the player. That's something we've probably not talked about enough of or even considered. Just because they're whatever, does that mean they're more fresh than not? How coachable are they today? I don't know. Are there any strategies you use, Yaz? Because I've done stuff in the past where I've asked players as they arrive to draw an emoji, like a smiley face or a sad face, or just give me a thumbs up, thumbs down. Or, you know, I've done stuff on even like coaching courses where I've had pictures of cats. You're going to laugh. I stole that one from Rusty, Russell Earnshaw. And like, there's one cat where it looks like super angry, another cat where it's like legs akimbo, looks like it's going to go to sleep, another cat where it's whatever pitch, and they have a number. And I've said to me, pick a number, which one are you? And I've done it at the start and at the end, just to try and gauge, like, how are they arriving to this today? You know, are they coming in and they're not ready, or are they coming in like, no, I'm ready to go, like, I'm, you know, and do they leave as a green? Do they leave as a red? I don't know if you've done anything similar to that, where that might influence your coach interaction as well.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I think those strategies are really useful. I think if I was to go with anything like what you've explained, it probably would be slightly younger age groups. But typically, a lot of the coaching I do is like with older players, kind of 15 upwards sort of thing. So I just have a conversation with them. Quick 30-second, 45-second conversation, unless it needs to go beyond that. I'm very deliberate about trying to speak to every player at the start of the session individually, just not just a high end, yeah, go and get in the session. No, hi, how's your day been? What you been up to? How was school, if they're in school, and whatever that looks like. So I think that is usually my gauge. And obviously, as time's gone on, because this is the other thing we've got to be conscious of as well, is that young players in particular, or even just players in general, when you start working with them, you might not get a full and open, honest response to your questions, not because they're trying to hide anything, because they're just, you know, they don't see the relevance of it. But I think as time goes, you start to develop a relationship with your players. They start to better understand, hopefully, that you're asking these questions because you're genuinely curious and genuinely interested in how they are, and that you're only trying to find this information out so you can better support them throughout the session and throughout the season. So I think those are probably just, like, you know, real basic things for me in terms of gauging how your players are feeling. Especially you talk there about the word readiness. And I think, you know, you're asking young players to identify whether they're ready to be coached today effectively probably is going to be very difficult for them to articulate in a way that's, again, useful and supportive for how you're going to deliver the session. But just, yeah, it's a good consideration, really. I guess, I don't know what your response is on that, but, or if you've got any other questions that have been thrown at you recently.
Trying to think of other questions. I'd be curious if there's any questions from the audience, really. You know, what questions have you guys got that you think would be useful to unpack if anyone wants to unmute themselves? You know, that'd be probably a really good one. I mean, just while people are thinking, if anyone wants to sort of unmute and raise a hand, we can get to you. There was a question I got posed recently, which was just a general advice for going through the licenses, because they want to obviously go on a certain pathway and they want to have a career in the game coaching and they want to get through the licenses. And it sort of drew me back to, I hate the one word of the words I hate a lot in some ways, whether it's right or wrong, is consolidate your learning. Because I know the way it's meant and I get it, but I can see it from two avenues. Having been a young coach trying to rise through the ranks myself, and you, obviously we've been fortunate to make a career of this, where I've had educators go, whoa, 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 slow down, slow down. And part of it is because they're trying to slow you down or stop you getting a license similar to them or whatever, whatever. And I'm all for consolidate your learning. Don't rush. Like, take your time and be the best coach you can be. Just because you've passed a license doesn't mean that's it, I've mastered it. It's a bit like your driving test. It really is. You pass your driving license, your driving test, you're not suddenly an expert driver. You don't learn how to drive until after, right? And even then, you probably get worse in some cases. But you've got to keep at your craft, haven't you? So don't assume that because I've got my A license or because I've got my D license that I know more or less than somebody else or I'm better. It just means that on that day you've demonstrated competency to operate at that level. But you've got to continuously work at it and don't be in a hurry to get to the next lesson. But that said, I still think you go at the speed you need to go at. You know, because if you're somebody that's like, do you know what? I've got a lot of experience. I'm already ready for the next step. Why do I need to wait 6 months, 12 months, whatever many months? Then who are we to say no or whatever? You know, in education, you go from primary school to secondary school, to high school, whatever, to college or 6 months. Nobody says, whoa, 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 hang fire. Don't be going to, you know, don't go out into the workplace and get a job. You got to consolidate all that learning that we've just battered you with. Well, you know what I mean? Then nobody would do anything. And I'm not trying to give away my bias, but I'd be interested to know what you think. I did get asked this question recently of what's the sort of advice. And my advice was don't be in a rush to learn because then you're potentially skipping a lot of important milestones. But at the same time, go at the speed you feel you're ready at. And that was my thing, but I don't know what you think, Yaz, or anyone else in the room, when it comes to sort of going through the licensing and courses. Obviously, I've given you my bias.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good question, actually. I was asked something recently similar to that. Sorry. But for me, I really like the idea of, like I said, go at your own pace. But I think it's really important that you understand what you've been able to. Really, you know, use that word again, consolidate. What have you been able to consolidate? Have you actually taken away from the course that you're going on and actually been able to go back and apply it and actually really understand it? I think in my case, if I'm honest, I've always been of the mind of, well, at least for me personally, is I always like to know what I'm working towards next. So I'm always looking one step ahead, but I'm not in a rush to necessarily get through that process. Because if I know what's coming next, I can start to kind of embed that and understand where what I'm currently working with implements itself within that. But I think linking it to advice, I think the best advice I can give anyone is that get yourself around coaches who think differently to you. And I think that's probably the hardest part. You know, for a lot of coaches working, especially if you're working in grassroots football, depending on the environment you're in, you're very much likely going to be working by yourself. Or if you're a younger coach or a newer coach coming into the process, you're probably going to be working with someone else who's maybe been doing it for a little while, and they might have their own biases. And I think the important thing for me is making sure you're constantly, regularly engaging in different CPD opportunities. So whether it's these types of conversations, whether it's, you know, joining a community of practice with other coaches, whether it's, you know, engaging with mentoring. I think there's always elements that you can kind of keep yourself engaged in just to make sure that you're still learning, you're still challenging your ideas and your perceptions on how coaching should or could look. And I think, like I said, going back to the grassroots environments, I think it's very easy to fall into a trap of, one, just falling into line with what everyone else in the environment is doing, or completely down the other end of the spectrum. You've got some environments where no one is aligned at all, and there's not even any conversations taking place around whether the sessions have been effective or useful for the players, in which case you're kind of left to your own devices. And I think that's, I guess, when even more so important, get yourself around a mentor. Ask yourself, what do you think you're good at as a coach? And I think there's a really, you know, useful question to ask yourself is not what am I the best at, but what am I strong at? And I think there's two differences fundamentally, because me and you could have the same strength, but be operating at different levels with that strength. And I think that's important to understand as well. Just because I might be good at planning practices and you might be good at planning practices doesn't mean that I'm necessarily better than you or you're better than me. But even in that case, now that I've understood my strengths, can I also equally understand where I need to maybe support myself in terms of developing further? It's not necessarily to become a jack of all trades, but become a master of some and identify and be aware of where those areas for development are. And I think those are probably the key bits for me. And I think, you know, for all the coaches listening to this right now, my bet, you know, the one thing I would say is try and get yourself out there. Go and watch other coaches work. Build relationships with coaches that are willing to have conversations with you around why they're coaching the way they're coaching. Be willing to ask those questions that you might want to understand the real rationale behind their processes and their approaches. And don't necessarily just try and, you know, yes, go towards anywhere you feel like you can be supported, but I think just as importantly, if not more importantly, go somewhere where where the people are thinking different to what you're currently thinking. And that will A1, help you understand better why maybe you're doing what you're doing, but B, also help you better understand potentially what you're not actually considering at this point in time. So I mean, those would be my initial thoughts on it. I don't know if there's anything you want to add to that or build on.
No, I don't want to add anything. I think you said it really, really well, especially with the last comment. Well, not the last comment. There was one of the comments you said around, like, depending on what level you're operating at. So you can be doing the same sort of task, if you like, but how you're operating at what level is different, isn't it? That contextual. I love that. I think that's a great shout. That's a really good shout. So, no, I can't add anything onto what you said. It's spot on. Is anyone in the room? Anyone got any questions for either me, Yaz, or each other? You know, we're fortunate we've got a lot of different experiences in the room listening. So it's definitely, you know, useful to gather from you guys as well. If anyone's willing to share.
Just while we're waiting, Jared, and if anyone does want to share in the last few minutes, I'll probably throw a question your way. What would be your advice? You know, knowing what you know now, having worked in the game as long as you have, what would be your number one bit of advice for a coach starting out their journey or early on in their journey now?
Let me think, because there's lots, isn't there?
Or better, if what's one thing you wish you knew at the start of your journey that you do know now?
Oh, God, two really deep questions. I'll try and answer both, actually. Well, the one thing, and it's not the only thing, obviously, it's just one thing, would be that, to your first question, really knowing the game. And when I say knowing the game, just gaining experiences of coaching at different ages, formats, and levels of the game. Because when I started out coaching, and I know we've had this debate before, I watch a lot of matches, I watch a lot of clips, I analyse games, but there'll be also times where I don't watch, you know, I work in football, and me and you have spoken about this, haven't we? We both work in football, soccer, whatever, but we might not watch the match, but we've got a good understanding, you know, so... Where I'm going with that is I don't think you necessarily have to be like some people are, where they're so obsessed and they're watching games week in, week out, or they're at live games or whatever. That definitely helps, for sure. But I think what is an advantage. When I first started coaching, I felt that, you know, I was good at running an activity, like running a session. And obviously you don't know what you don't know. So at the level I was coaching at when I started, I was doing my own little soccer schools. I was going into primary schools and secondary schools, doing one-to-ones. Eventually started getting into academy coaching later on, and the rest is history. But when you first start, you run these sessions, you think you're like top dog. You're like, look at me, and the kids are loving it, and a high five. If you were to watch some of those sessions back now, you'd probably critique them, right? But the activity alone is just one part of it, and that's just at the level that you're at. But there's so many different levels, because you've got to think about where do the players need to get to. And where I remember the first sort of like, oof, moment for me was I always felt very confident running activities. Even when I got asked to put on a session for a first team and even like really strong top players, that one-off little snapshot set, everyone's like, boom, he knows his stuff, look at that, it's class. Yeah. But being able to do that week in, week out, and relate that to the matches, that's a different question now, right? And the first moment for me was, I remember coaching an older age team. It was an under-19s team, and it was in a match, and I physically couldn't really tell what, at that time, I was young, I was in my sort of 19, 20 or whatever when I started in that role. I couldn't tell what was going on because the game was just moving too fast for me. I remember we won the game, but I couldn't have told you how good my halftime talk was. I couldn't tell you how good my general feedback during the game. And I don't think I could take any credit for any of the coaching that took place. You know, the sessions that I ran before were fine activities, but the actual game, the players won the game. It had nothing to do with me and that stage in my career, just because the game moved too fast. I couldn't see what was going on. So it was, and even I remember my first game as an academy coach. I was so confused, and I remember coaching the under-11s, and we were playing Burnley. And honestly, it was hard because I was on my own. I didn't have an assistant, and I'm trying to manage the subs, make sure everyone's got game time, do X, Y, Z, whilst thinking about, I spent more time subbing players in different periods so that they got their game time versus thinking, well, I need to put him in this position because that's going to stretch and challenge him more, and I'm going to do this and that. And really just coaching to what was in front of me. I was going off a plan, really, and the game was just a blur, and I can't remember it. It just blew by. And I still remember that going, oof, like, I need to get better here. I need more game experience, tactics, and just knowing how to manage games. And there was periods where playing against some games. And so what I did to solve that was I got very used to, and it worked for me. My experience doesn't mean it worked for everyone, but it worked for me, was coaching at different ages, stages, and formats. And there was no ego involved. And I volunteered, and I did everything. I did some paid work, and I worked with disability football, women's, girls, boys, men's, college, uni, academy, development centres. I did it all. And I think going into those games where the best acceleration for me was I was doing academy games. So I had those experiences of playing against, you know, teams like Preston, Burnley, your Oldhams, like your Cat 3s, your Cat 2s, your Cat 1s every now and then and things like that. Had experience of coaching at a non-league level and being a first-team head coach, working with senior adults, and then experience of... So my game knowledge was getting better and better is what I'm getting at. And that helped me think better about, right, this activity doesn't really relate to the game or what their game looks like, or this doesn't relate to this, or I need to do more match prep. And just expanding your knowledge of the game. So I think, you know, really thinking about your experiences... Don't get too carried away with thinking I'm top dog and I know everything I'm doing, because we don't know what we don't know. So my one piece of advice is, the more you learn, you end up finding out that there's actually a lot that you don't know. Like, genuinely, the minute you think you've, and I know people have said it, but it's so true, the minute you've realized that you think you've known everything you can know at that possible level, that's when you need your sort of kick yourself and go, no, because there's going to be something that you're overlooking. And even if you have sort of maxed out everything at that particular level, then you need to go to that next step. And you're probably going to realize, actually, there's a lot of things I was, you know, missing that I wasn't even thinking about, even at the level I was working at. So you need to keep realizing how you can expand. And then the second question where you asked about, you know, what do you wish you knew now that you could say to your younger self type of thing, I would probably say don't, and it's so hard this one, so I'm contradicting myself here, Yaz, don't look sideways to compare your journey to someone else's. You can look sideways for almost a little bit of motivation, inspiration or whatever, but really their journey is their journey. And that's a hard one because I'm still guilty of that even now. So I said, like, there's a little bit of, you know, a hypocrite in there, because there's so many times where you can look at somebody else and look at how they're coaching and think that's the way, and look at how they've kicked on and look at their players. Doesn't mean they're doing the right things. You could look at somebody and go, wow, look at his career and look at the experiences and I'm better than him, or why aren't I there or whatever. That's their story. It's not yours. Just focusing on how you can be the best of you, you'll probably be better for it. So just treating every day as like, today, how can I be better than I was yesterday? And just go with that mindset. Don't look and compare, because it's going to be very difficult. And I think it's so easily done because, you know, there's probably bigger problems here, Yaz, which is that coaching in general isn't the best paid job in the world, right? Like, in a lot of ways, we're paid better than some industries. So we've got to be, you know, appreciative of that. But in other aspects, it's you're working. There's a reason why soccer, football coaches, high divorce rate, right? Super high divorce rate. There's no question of that. There's a reason why, you know, there's burnout and there's XYZ, because we're working unsociable hours. You're working late in the evenings, late at weekends, and it's very, very taxing on your family. Or if you ever want to have a family or whatever, whatever. So that itself, and then because of it and because of the pay scale, and typically that the higher the position you're in, normally the more money you get. So then what happens is people end up chasing coaching with older players or certain age groups, or being in certain titles because they know that's going to give them more money. That to me is, there's like, yes, that has some validity, but there's also a danger, isn't there, Yaz? Because you can end up trying to do that, but you're not, you know, and this is where it's hard as well. It's a double-edged one. I hear coaches, oh, be the best under 11 coach you can be. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. That's a great, I believe in that. Does that pay the bills? Do you know what I mean? Like, paying the bills might mean that I might have to be the under whatever coach. So it's a very, very challenging task that we have as coaches. It should never be. So my one piece of advice is just, that's always going to be in your mind of how can I get more and do more and be better, and look at what that guy's doing compared to what I'm doing. But try your hardest not to worry too much about that, because you'll end up going into insanity. And just try to be as strong as you can and better than you were yesterday. And that's going to stand you in good stead. But there's a lot there, isn't there, Yaz? I don't know if, you know, even on that last one, what your advice is.
100%. I'll just touch on the first question first and foremost. I think, you know, as you were speaking, it just reminded me back to what I often look at as like the most accelerated period for me in terms of development. And that was kind of like between back end of 2016 and kind of up to the end of 2018. It's like an 18-month period where I just felt like I was just growing and growing and growing as a coach. And it literally just aligns to what you said. I was working across 5 different environments with different age groups, different contexts. I was working academy football, I was working with university football, I was working in college football, I was working in grassroots football, and then I was working with goalkeepers as well. And I just remember at the time, obviously a lot of my experience is kind of really 14s to kind of 19s male players typically. And at the time, there was some key things that I used to feel like, yeah, I've for lack of a better way of describing it, I've cracked this. And it was only during that period where I started expanding my environments, then my experiences across those different environments, where I started to apply the stuff that I was doing, and, you know, that I thought might only be relevant for 14 to kind of 18-year-olds, and then start applying it in the university context, then start applying it in the grassroots context with younger players, then start, you know. And what I realized, actually, these are, you know, I start to pick up on some key principles which worked for me across all environments, especially in terms of like how I design and deliver my practices. But the thing about it was I was in constant mode of reflection, right? What's worked, what hasn't worked, how's it, what might I need to change for the next group? And effectively what I was doing, I was just using the same practices across four or five environments on a daily basis and just adapting them, tweaking them, just to see, all right, well, does this practice work with all? Does this practice need a slight tweak for the younger group as it might, as opposed to the older group? And it just started raising my considerations around that. But then on the second point that you just touched on in terms of the coaching journey, I think it's so important, right? You know, we can't control what the journey is going to look like, but we can control how deliberate and intentional we are with interacting in that journey. So I think if we're just mindful that everyone's going to have their own journey and everyone's going to have different experiences, everyone's going to have different opportunities, then it's not about having, I guess, a negative mentality towards it, but it's just understanding what can I learn from other people's journeys as well. And someone asked me recently, well, how do you stay up to date and stay modern and stay current with your knowledge of the game and you in coaching when, you know, maybe you're not so active in coaching as much as you used to be? And I said, to be honest with you, like 70% of my week is spent talking to other coaches, and majority of those coaches are either at my level or above. And I'm involved in a lot of coach education elements, delivering coach education across grassroots environments, delivering mentoring, all these different aspects. But that's probably only 30% of the coaching conversations I actually have. A lot of my conversations I'm having with people that I know are going to think differently. I know are going to be challenging my thoughts and my perceptions. And not just that, but speaking to coaches and engaging with people from different sports. Someone asked me a question recently, you know, obviously a lot of your experiences are, you know, they asked me to come and deliver a workshop for them. And the workshop was actually based on coaching individuals. And, you know, an interesting question that came up in the conversation was, you know, how would you support coaches who are effectively working in individual sports? And I think, you know, it was such an interesting question, because obviously we're always looking at it as, how do we bring the team together? We talk about developing the individual, but the developing the individual is very much still dependent on the people around them and the players that they're going to be interacting with, right? But it just got me thinking again, and, you know, and I guess the takeaway for me, for everyone to think about there, was how often are you actually spending speaking to coaches from different sports? Because sometimes the layman, if you like, or the person who's got no idea about football coaching specifically, might throw you some questions that you would never have considered yourself. And it's a great way for you to just to kind of embark on thoughts and considerations that you've never actually, you never would have or potentially could have taken into account outside of the game itself. So I think it's just not just engaging with coaches within it, but outside of it. And not just, and again, looking at what you've said about, you know, aligning your journey to everyone else's, we are all on a different journey. And that's the beauty of this. We're all going to be engaging with different things at different stages. We're all going to have different outcomes that we're going after. But the best thing I can say to everyone is be clear on what it is that you want and what you're going after, and be deliberate and intentional about going after the things that are going to help you succeed in that environment. And then a final point that just came up for me as you were speaking, Joe, was, you know, there'll be times where you've actually forgotten what you know, right? And it takes certain experiences and a combination of experiences. Sometimes going to just trying different things or moving into different environments, which then helps remind you, oh, actually, I do know this stuff over here, but I haven't had to think about that for 2 or 3 years. So again, just bringing those things to the forefront, your considerations again is just a really useful and helpful tool. And a bit of insight for yourself as a coach. So, I mean, those are my thoughts on that. I don't know if there's anything that you want to unpack further.
No, that's spot on. I think that's a great message to end on, everything you just said.
Awesome. So, yeah, guys, you know, welcome back to, obviously, the spaces that we're running here. We have got some more spaces sessions coming up over the next few weeks. And those will be FA-accredited CPD sessions. So if you are a coach of the English Football FA, then obviously you can qualify for CPD hours on that, which people always ask me, just for clarity, what is CPD, what's the benefits of it? Well, one, you're engaging in conversation with someone who's going to challenge and support your understanding of how to become a better coach. And two, for those of you who are looking to progress your journeys, any CPD hours you log on to your, I guess your accounts, will support you in applying for qualifications should you want to progress in the future as well. So definitely worth getting involved. Gerard, I don't know if you want to just share some insight on what the next series is and how people can potentially access those CPD sessions as and when they come up.
Yeah, so we're going to be sharing some info via social media and even access to our webinar series. The next one's going to be looking into insights around the Euros. So what were the key things that we've took from the recent European Championships and the men's teams, and what we can learn and how that influences our practices. And there'll be a series of X spaces that we do every week that's accredited hours that'll lead into a two-hour accredited webinar through Middlesex FA with Yaz. And in addition to that, we'll do not only through September, that period will be, the webinar will be in September. There'll also be in October, November and December following webinar series that are part of this X spaces, where we're looking at game-based approaches, constraints-led approach and so forth, all designed to improve and share more ideas around how coaches coach.
Awesome. So guys, just make sure you're following us if you're not already, both myself and Gerard. Stay in touch with us. If you've got any questions, feel free to kind of drop us a message, or even in the future, if there's any questions around anything that's been discussed in the spaces session themselves, by all means, raise your hand, request to speak. And we can bring you involved in that. Obviously, you know, a large part of what we're trying to do here is build a coaching community that are there, one, to engage in conversations, provide insights for one another, but just ultimately help everyone get better at this thing that we do called coaching. So that's it from me, guys. But make sure you're checking this out. Follow us. And if you haven't managed to catch the full conversation on here, all the spaces sessions that we do get uploaded onto the Coaches Network podcast. Which you can find on all major platforms. Gerard, over to you.
Nah, I look forward to it. I can't wait for the next series. You know, feel free to follow us, reach out if you've got anything, and, you know, see you next week.
Awesome. Take care, guys. Have a great evening and catch you next week.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.